When Peter Cresta, one of Australia's most acclaimed journalists, first arrived in Egypt shortly before Christmas 2013 to cover for a colleague at Al Jazeera's English language channel, he thought he would be departing again within a fortnight. 1 year and 1 month later, Peter Cresta was finally allowed to leave the country. What had begun as a short working trip in a city that he barely knew turned into a terrifying ordeal in a country that he came to understand all too well from the bowels of its most notorious prison. Last week we celebrated the release of Dr. Kylie Moore-Gilbert. She's now in Australia, back home in quarantine, and she has been released from an 800-day stint in an Iranian jail. Peter Cresta's stint was 400, hers is 800. Professor Ian Hickey, he's the co-director of the University of Sydney's Brain and Mind Centre. He said most people exposed to acute traumatic events such as car crashes do not go on to develop psychological trauma. The people who are most at risk are those who are subjected to chronic, persistent, ongoing stress. And those kinds of overstress would be keenly felt in overseas detention. Peter Cresta, welcome to the program this afternoon.
Good to be here.
Thank you for your time. Did you have any idea that you were going to be freed from that hellhole that you were imprisoned in?
No, none whatsoever. In fact, on the morning that I was released, I'd been thinking about our strategy in the campaign to get out, and I'd realised that, in fact, we'd run out of all of the foreseeable opportunities, both political and legal, for the government to actually do anything to get us out of prison. And so my brother was due for a visit in prison that day, and I was going to tell him that we needed to start a hunger strike because I was so convinced that it wasn't going to happen. And I remember I was out, and there was a corridor outside my cell, and for a couple of hours each day, the guards would open up the cell door so that I could run up and down the corridor in a kind of long shuttle run, and I was on my daily run when one of the guards called me over and said, "Listen, the boss needs to speak to you." So I said, "You want me to go to his office?" He said, no, he's just outside the gate. So I went outside the block, and the warden was there, and he said, "I've got some news for you. Pack your things. You're going." And I said, "Well, what do you mean I'm going?" I said, "Am I moving prisons?" He said, no. "The embassy's here in half an hour. You're going home. Get your stuff together. Yeah, let's get going." It was completely and utterly surreal for me. I had absolutely no idea it was coming. In fact, in all sorts of ways, it was quite a shock.
How did you feel about leaving your friends behind?
I was traumatised by that. As you mentioned, I had two colleagues who were still in prison. In fact, more than two. There are a whole bunch of other students who are also imprisoned in our case, even though they had nothing to do with us. It's one of the weird quirks of our case. But we always discussed what would happen if someone was released and others were left behind. And we realized that if that were the case, then the person that was released would be in the best possible position to advocate for the release of the others. But that doesn't mean that it was an easy thing to do, to leave them behind in the prison cell.
When you got back to Australia, I read somewhere, Peter, that you said you were just wanting to get on with your life, but your life had changed and you couldn't pick up from where you left off. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, that's right. It was a tough thing to do because one of the things I used to do when I was in prison was to take myself back to my old life. I'd often lie in bed thinking about that time, and I had a pretty good life as a foreign correspondent. I had some wonderful friends. I had a life that was full of adventure. I was able to travel widely, go to all sorts of extraordinary places and meet some fantastic people. And I remember desperately looking forward to the moment when I could get out of prison and resume that old life. One of the problems that I had when I got back was the realization that I could never, ever go back to that. That life was over. It was really hard because as I said, it was something that I really craved when I was in prison, and I spent a lot of time grieving for that. It was eventually, though, I realized that however much I might want to go back, you simply can't go through an experience of imprisonment like that and pick up where you left off. You've changed, the world has changed, and the way the world sees you has changed. And so you really need to reconstruct what the new normal is. The one thing you can't ever do, and I think it's a bit of a folly to try to do, but even though some people do, is put that period, that experience in prison to one side as if it never happened. That's just not an option. It's, whether you like it or not, it is now part of who you are, part of your life. That's not to say that you spend all of your time obsessing about it, but you need to accept it.
They say we learn something from everything. Did you learn anything good? Did anything good come out of your imprisonment in Egypt?
Yes, for me, yes. It forced me to review a lot of the things of my life. I think I appreciated the good things of my life much more than I ever had before, things that I took for granted. I also came to realize that I'm a hell of a lot stronger than I ever gave myself credit for. And I suppose in some respects it's given me an opportunity to leverage what happened in Egypt and talk about these kinds of things in precisely the way that I'm talking to you. You know, the point is that I've been able to use it and build on it and not see it as something that was completely destructive. It wasn't 400 days of my life that I'll never get back. And so I think that's been really key. Now, I've been very lucky because I'm in a position where I can do that. Not everybody who goes through an experience like this is in the kind of position that I am. And of course, each person deals with it in their own way. I'm not simply saying that everybody should handle it the way that I did. Everyone, you know, each person's story is unique, and the tools that the background that they bring to their story is also unique. And so what they do with it afterwards is unique. But for me, it transformed my life in ways that are good and bad. But it hasn't all been bad. There's certainly some good stuff to come out of it.
Peter, what do you think is going to be the hardest thing for Dr. Kylie Moore-Gilbert after she's released from her 14-day quarantine?
Well, look, you know, one of the things is that there's huge amounts of public attention. Everybody will want to know Kylie's story. Everyone will want to be speaking to her, to hear from her. She needs to be able to tell the story in her own time, if ever. It's really up to her. It's going to be hard dealing with that attention in the first place. And then it's going to be even harder dealing with the kind of void that follows, because ultimately the media caravan moves on and you're often left with a big sort of question mark. What do I do now? What do I do with all this experience? And how do I reconcile what I've been through with the world that I have, with the life that I have and people's expectations? It can be very isolating because there are so few people you've ever been through an experience like this, so you can find it very hard to find others to talk to about this.
What were you thinking as to your mindset if you had to suffer and endure imprisonment for the 7 years that you were sentenced to?
I realised that I'd have to make the most of the time that I had in prison. There was a lot of debate about this inside the prison. A lot of my colleagues felt that they needed to continually fight their imprisonment rather than embrace it. I felt that was, because they saw that as a sort of ongoing form of resistance. I thought that was a way of psychologically harming yourself. So I felt that I had to figure out ways of actually using the time that I had and not wasting it. So I managed to, I started baking sourdough bread, for example, in prison. I managed to convince the warden to let me study a master's degree in international relations from Griffith University in prison. It wasn't the easiest thing to do, but I was determined to try and make sure that I pushed the authorities to let me do more than they would normally, but not in a way that was ever going to be threatening to the security of the prison.
Were you treated fairly in prison?
Look, there were times... The whole imprisonment was unjust. It was utterly unjust, and that was always tough. The early stages, I spent quite a lot of time in solitary confinement. Occasionally, we were never tortured, but solitary itself is a form of, I guess, a form of torture. And the UN Human Rights Convention certainly considered it to be a form of torture. But and certainly there were some guards, some of the wardens who were particularly rough with us. But also we had so much international pressure, so much attention paid to our case, that I think the conditions that we were held in were probably better. Were better than the conditions of a lot of the other prisoners. Say that it was fair is probably an overstatement.
How do you feel about Egypt now?
Oh, I've never had any animosity towards Egypt as a nation or its people. I've always felt that Egypt, I've got a lot of affection for Egypt and Egyptians, and I'd love to go back. I can't, of course, because I'm a convicted terrorist and they still want me to serve out a prison sentence in Egypt. But I don't blame Egypt or Egyptians as a nation, as a people, for what happened to us. I blame a small group of individuals and a political system, that spectacularly toxic political system, for what happened to us.
I imagine Carly Moore Gilbert will feel exactly the same way about Iran and the people in Iran.
Yeah, she certainly said that in her statement, the statement that she released just after she was set free. She said that she has a lot of affection for the Iranian people, and I've been asked a few times whether she was coerced into saying that, but I don't think she was. I'm pretty sure she made the same distinction that I did. I've never expressed any animosity towards Egypt or Egyptians. I do think they're wonderful people. They're wonderfully hospitable. They've got a fantastically rich culture. They are extraordinary, and I'm absolutely certain Kylie feels the same way.
Peter, we'll leave it there. Thank you for your time today. I do follow you on Twitter, so I do keep up with what you're doing. And thank you for your time. I really appreciate and have enjoyed our chat.
No, it's a pleasure.
Peter Krester this afternoon.